never was anything great achieved without danger. Niccolo Machiavelli.
We saw crocodiles. Chris went to swim in the, because in the Lake Tanganyika there are crocodiles, and
there were signs,
don't swim there. But Chris is like, well, I'm
but
dirty
I had
from
snake
hiking.
Eyes with me, so I was like, snake eyes, keep an eye. Keep an eye on crocodiles.
Like half an hour later, we did see a crocodile there. And then we saw hippos, like massive, massive hippos. They're crazy.
They're and a bit angry.
Wild hogs. Snakes during the hike we didn't see, I think, but
in
before
the project,
that we saw.
Yeah, there were some African rock python, I think it's called.
Yeah,
it's like
biggest python in the world.
3 meter long snake. Huge. So powerful. Like when you lift it, it's so dense, like it's just one muscle. Crazy.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest, another adventuring couple who, in addition to doing some long trail through hiking, have also had some other incredible adventures. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Stina and Christian.
Hello.
Now, it is morning where I am in Southern California, but it is not morning where you guys are. Tell us where you are.
We are in Estonia. It's northern / eastern Europe. Our neighbor to the east is Russia. So we are holding tight here. And then, to the north is Finland. And we are from the Baltics pretty much. That's maybe most people would know.
Yeah, and it's the evening here. So we've just had a full day of, working, even though it's Sunday. But
And even though we are here, we don't really have home. We are homeless for the last 5 years. We are at Stina's dad's sauna house currently.
Okay, you've been homeless for the last 5 years, and I think we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Sure. Okay.
Now, Stina, you are from Estonia. Christian, you are not from Estonia. You are from the neighboring country to the south.
Yeah, I'm from Latvia, from Riga. So we actually, I don't know if I should say it now, but met in Denmark. Weirdly enough, when we were studying mechanical engineering. Yeah, so that was 10 years ago when we did that.
Okay, very good. I'm Danish, actually, so I've never been to Denmark, but...
I thought that when you said your last name, I was like, should I ask?
We lived there for 6 years, so Stina is almost fluent in Danish, and I speak a little bit, so...
Okay. Lots of good climbing in the Baltics?
Not at all. We have no mountains. We have some cliffs, but it's like sandstone, so it doesn't hold anything. So the highest point in the Baltics is in Estonia, and it's 360 meters. So that's nothing compared to what you guys have there. So
there's like one or two boulders, I think, in our country.
Yeah, some boulders. We don't like bouldering that much.
Yeah. We actually picked up climbing in Denmark in the gym.
Okay. Now, are there any good hiking trails in the Baltics? A lot of good hiking opportunities?
Yeah, but it's you can't compare really to mountain hiking. It's a lot of forest hiking. What's unique here is definitely that we have bogs, like kind of like swamps, but the government has made a lot of these cool elevated trails that you can use, and there are also long distance trails that they put together, but some bits of it are still road walking, so it's maybe not the kind of a wilderness experience that you would get in US or in some other countries. But and it's very popular and definitely supported, and there's a lot of infrastructure like huts and shelters and campsites and things like that. So
great. Fantastic. Yeah. Now, I know you guys have spent some time on a long trail, the PCT. There is a unique American tradition of handing out trail names on long trails. Did you guys come by a trail name while you were out there?
We did.
Okay, I can't wait to hear. What are the trail names?
I think it makes more sense if I tell my story first.
Okay.
Because before the PCT, we were in Central America and we were taking this course in the jungle to become expedition leaders. And in the jungle, of course, there's a lot of snakes. And for some reason, my eyes really pick up their camouflaged bodies. And also when the snakes are moving. So the people from our group started to call me Snake Eyes.
Right.
And yeah, once we got on the trail, I think on like day two or three, there was this super tiny snake that I spotted. And then Chris was like, okay, like, you have proved that even on trail, you still keep spotting the snakes. So yeah, we just kept that one.
Snake Eyes.
Yeah. We were going in a group and like everyone would step over the snake and then Stina was like, hey guys, there was a snake. I was like, oh, good eyes. Yeah. And right. Well, yeah, then my trail name kind of came from a bit after, right after the jungle. We had about a month between the course and the PCT where we were spending it in Mexico. And then, on trail, when we started the PCT, like on first week, we met this guy, Broken Arrow. It was like 76-year-old guy, like really cool. And he kind of asked what were we up to before. And then we told that, we just came from Mexico. And he was like, so you brought her from Mexico? You must be Coyote. So, like a common trail name. There are many coyotes on PCT, but not the coyote as a
smuggler,
as an animal.
Right, right.
Different. So that was just funny. So then I didn't mess up, so I didn't get a different name. So I stuck with that.
Okay. And I know it's Christian with a K. Is it Coyote with a K?
It can be.
Yeah.
Well, it's how you call them in California. I don't know.
Okay. And another question, Broken Arrow, he was 76. When he was younger, was he just Arrow?
Well, he didn't look broken. So I think it's because actually he had a very interesting story himself. He was writing a book on how all the wolves were hunted in the U.S. and how there's like the effort to trying to bring mm-hmm. them back, you know, in Yellowstone and so on.
Right.
And he had been traveling a lot in native areas and was picking up these arrowheads and things. So I think because he also gave us one arrowhead as a kind of memory item. So
had some cool stories. How he was hiding from the wolves under the rocks and had sprayed himself with the the masking so they couldn't smell him out. And it was well.
He smelled like the rest of them.
Yeah.
Wolf scent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And congratulations, Snake Eyes and Coyote, because this is the first interview that we've done from a sauna room.
Oh,
yeah.
We should have actually been in the sauna.
Have you been to sauna?
No, not very frequently.
All right.
You have to come visit.
Here it's proper sauna. So, yeah, I don't know the degrees in Fahrenheit, but it's not the kind that you get in a spa, you know. It's the one where you're burning.
And 100 degrees Celsius is like normal.
Yeah.
Ouch. Okay.
Yeah. We actually had an American friend with us in sauna and he adjusted fast, but it is a strange experience for people who are not used to it. So
did he survive?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good. Hey, Snake Eyes and Coyote, have you listened to the podcast before?
Few episodes, yeah. I really like the one with Elena Osborne because I'm a huge fan of her work. So
yeah, she's incredible. She's incredible. Mm-hmm. And we're going to re-air that episode next week, I believe, as part of Women's History Month here in the United States. So taking that opportunity to highlight some of the amazing women that I've interviewed over the past couple of years. So hey, I only ask if you've listened to the podcast because I want to make sure that you are aware of a segment towards the end called the Pro Tip Inside of the Week. And that's where I will turn to you and ask you for some trail wisdom that you can share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. And I love when I have a duo on the podcast because that means we get two pro tips for the price of one. So each one of you will be expected to give out some trail wisdom at the end of the episode.
Cool.
That's right.
We'll do.
Okay. You can give out trail wisdom throughout the episode if you like, but you'll still be on the hook at the end to give out the official pro tip.
They are full of wisdom.
Okay, good. Good. That's what I hear about the Baltics. Lots of wisdom.
And pretty women.
Yes, okay.
The must bring gear review.
All right. Hey, another feature we've been doing this season is the must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Outdoor Vitals. And here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So guys, what is your must bring piece of gear? And I get one from each of you. So.
Okay. So it's a bit of a tricky question because it says if you can let someone pack your bag. So the question is, can it be the bag itself?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right. So definitely for me, it would be the bag. I don't know if for Chris as well, but we bought new backpacks, ultralight bags from this guy actually from Denmark. He's, I think he's now a two-man operation, but he's a true hiker himself. And what is really cool about it is the fact that it's made here in Europe. For us, it's quite difficult, you know, to get stuff from CPACs or what are the other ones? Enlightened equipment and so on, like
right.
Because of the import taxes and it takes a long time. And anyway, all of those UL things, they take so long. So it's really cool that there are now popping up a lot of small companies in Europe. So the company I'm talking about is called Blind Banana Bags. And he makes custom backpacks. You can choose colors and sizes and also, I think, baby bags. But yeah, we recently used these bags in our section hike of the Greater Patagonian Trail in Chile. And trust me, we did so much bushwhacking and river crossings. And like, we just put these guys through like hell. And they just, I don't think anything ripped or punctured or anything. They're just super solid things.
That's
so
that's impressive. Osprey would have ripped for sure.
Nice. Nice. What's the capacity of the bag that you have?
You can choose
what you want, but I had 40 liters and Chris had 45. I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think they are just about 650 grams. So I'm not sure what that is in your strange measurements.
But it's like fully custom. So like it really depends like very when you put strings here or there. So you can customize down to the last detail, everything. So it's pretty cool.
Our American listeners, you know, we have listeners all over the world, but our American listeners, I want you to pause right now. I want you to find your resource for converting from the imperial system to the metric system, because we're talking to some European guests here, and we are basically the only people on the planet who use miles and pounds and that kind of stuff. So totally okay to use kilometers and grams and the whole metric system. We'll convert it on our own over here. So thank you.
I think we've definitely adjusted to miles because on PCT you kind of get used to miles, but miles the other pounds. Units not
it's
really.
Not that difficult, but yeah, makes no sense, but if you have to use you can.
Yeah, just ask Google. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
I'd say the Puffy. It's a must. I had the since PCT and I still use it. It's the Ghost Whisperer from the Mountain Hardware. It's just...
It's held up super well.
Yeah, like when I first touched it, I thought, oh, this is going to rip in a few weeks, but it's still holding up and... Yeah, that's pretty much first thing you put on always after.
Yeah, a good Puffy is a must for any through hiker. Yeah, you have to have that that layer.
Yeah. Love my Puffy.
Yeah.
You guys have any luxury items that you bring, or do you guys go strictly ultralight?
Chris has.
I have pillow. Yeah, like I wouldn't say we are like ultralight. We are light, but not ultralight. So, yeah, like when I did PCT, I had a 88-liter Osprey pack, which on average weighed about 40 pounds. So,
but that was in the beginning.
Yeah. So, that's because right. My mentality was different. I was like, I don't care about carrying weights. I was just like taking whatever I want and just would, you know, suffer through.
And he was still the fastest guy on trail. Like, even when we were with these UL guys with, like, I don't know, 3-pound bags or something, you know, like, crazy obscene light bags, and he was just like crushing it. But it was definitely a learning lesson. And what's really interesting, especially back in 2018 or 2017, before we did the PCT, this whole UL movement hadn't even reached Europe. So we, even though we like read for preparing for the hike, it's kind of like you don't take it seriously. You're like, yeah, some people say you should go UL, but here it's like, it's just not how hiking is understood. It's the kind of mental image of a hiker is still these old leather boots and massive backpack. So it definitely took some adjusting to get there. But over the years, we've adjusted a lot. So
yeah, like once you try going with lighter pack and you still survive, then you're like, oh, maybe it's actually nicer for my knees and body.
Yeah, there's a balance between, you know, what you absolutely must bring, and also, you know, creature comforts. And am I going to be comfortable out there? Is it going to be okay? And also the weight. And it's always funny to hear about people first getting on trail and what they think they need and all of the weight that they bring, as opposed to, you know, a month later, you know, what they have discarded and kind of adjusted with their packs.
But I think it's good to start heavy because also UL gear costs a lot. So you don't want to invest a lot in it in the beginning if you don't know if you're even going to like hiking or who knows. Right. So once you kind of figured out yourself, then probably it's good to.
Yeah. I've got a perfect story for this. And my listeners, longtime listeners, will have heard this story a couple of times. So please bear with me. But this the perfect story for this is we had Ginger Balls on an episode. And he was a retired Navy veteran who decided he wanted to do some long trail hiking. He was going to hike the AT. And so being from the Navy, he was very prepared. He had three of everything in case the first two got lost or broke or whatever. So he showed up to Springer Mountain in Georgia with just this huge, huge pack, 40, 50 pounds. And he meets on the first day, he meets another guy who is 21 years old. And unbeknownst to Ginger Balls, Scrapbook, the 21-year-old, he is showing up to do the AT. This will be his third long trail. This will be his triple crown. And he has like a 12-pound pack. And the funniest image in my mind is the two of them standing there looking at each other. And they have both told me that they were thinking that, oh, this guy is not going to make it. This guy doesn't know what he's doing. And so Ginger Balls, he learned he didn't need three of everything, and he kind of adjusted and dialed in his pack. So it's more closely resembling Scrapbook's pack these days. So, but funny yeah. Image in my mind.
I think also what is really interesting to notice while you're hiking or to know before you start hiking is that your level of comfort will change. So what you consider now something that you definitely cannot manage without, whether it's a pillow or, I don't know, coffee pot or whatever these things change definitely. So you might start out one way with a big bag and then you totally adjust. And a few months later, you're like, wow, like I absolutely do not miss this item or I can use a functionality of something else to do the same job. So.
Right.
The lesson is to like be lazy packer and just forget something, and then you go out and then like, oh, I forgot this and that, but then you still come back alive. So you're like, well, I guess I didn't need it.
Lesson learned. That's right. Now, Coyote, you said that your luxury item is a pillow, as opposed to a stuff sack with dirty clothes and such, right? Or a puffy. Snake Eyes, do you have a luxury item that you like to bring?
I claim that I don't, but maybe if you were to really research, then maybe, I don't know, like lip balm or something. I mean, I guess you can survive without it, but it's kind of nice to have sometimes.
Snake Eyes is more hardcore.
Yeah.
She can just cover herself with branch in the mud and it's fine.
I try.
So just, you know, talking about those luxury items, lip balm possibly and a pillow. I'm imagining that neither of you carries a chair with you, an ultralight chair. No, there's plenty of logs or bear canisters to sit on, right?
Yeah, well, bear can was definitely a very PCT specific experience for us. Mm-hmm. We had never had that before, but yeah, usually it's on the ground. You put maybe the small mat underneath, or jacket, yeah. Or rain cover. We often use the backpack mm-hmm. rain cover, or just on a log if it's nice and dry. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Coyote, you can be honest with me. Does Snake Eyes, does she break her toothbrush in half? Or does she drill holes in the handle of her toothbrush, get rid of the gram? Yeah.
Well, she cuts. Well, actually, I cut it for her, and I asked how short she wants it. Because
this time.
I also cut mine, but not as short as hers, because I don't like my fingers enough, and I brush
No, he has a bigger hand. That's
that coyote right there, that's your luxury item, a slightly longer toothbrush than Snake Eyes. So you don't get your fingers in your mouth. Fantastic.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, we're going to talk about gear a little bit more with this next section. I like to call it the hiking pole.
It's the hiking pole.
And hiking pole is not spelled P-O-L-E like the ones you carry in your hands. It's P-O-L-L like a survey. And I make sure I explain it every time because my occasional co-host Chopper just really gets a kick out of the fact that I explain it and there's never any kind of reaction from my guests about that. But I thought it was pretty clever. So you don't have to agree with them. That's okay. So I'm going to ask you 7 questions. It's going to help me put you on somewhere on the crazy scale from 1 to 100, with 100 being completely sane and 1 being completely crazy. Okay. And I have to let you know.
Subjective.
Oh, it's totally subjective. It's up to me. It's up to me. This is all me. So I have to let you know right off the bat, you have each lost 20 points because you guys are long trail through hikers. You've hiked the PCT. You have to be a little bit crazy for that automatic 20 point deduction. So don't be offended by that.
Okay. Well, we didn't know what we were getting into when we started, but okay.
Okay. With the podcast or with the PCT?
You have to be crazy.
With the PCT.
Okay.
Like we didn't know it. We didn't know we were crazy when we started. It was just.
That is a hallmark of being crazy, is you are not aware that you're crazy. That's like part of the definition.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. So first question, easy. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles.
Okay.
Because we are in this long term. So we would like to hike also after we reach 60, 70, and 80 and more years old.
Yeah.
So we got to save our knees for all those steep downhills.
I definitely used to think it's an old people thing, but I adjusted very fast on the PCT. I started with a HikerBox hiking pole and then found another one. So
also helps with the rhythm and on the uphill, and often we tend to hike in places where there is no trail. So like having extra points of balance when the rock tips and you fall, then it's.
But I have to mention that Chris is legendary with the amount of hiking poles he has broken. So oftentimes he goes with a stick because it just doesn't break as much. So.
Yeah. And when we were in Armenia, I broke on day 2, and you couldn't buy hiking poles in Armenia or get them. So I hiked for a month just with a stick.
And then you broke the stick and then the next stick as well.
Hiking poles are hiking poles are not a big seller in Armenia.
Hiking isn't a big seller in Armenia. Only in the capital, I think.
And you brought up you want to be able to do this when you're older, so you don't want to be broken coyote and broken snake eyes. So that's good reason to use the trekking poles. Good.
Also, like they help with the way I break them often is when either someone dog attacks or something. So I try to hit it to not the dog, but
the ground,
the ground to kind of scare him. And also, yeah, it helps to keep distance because again, when we were hiking in Armenia, there are a lot of shepherd dogs, the angry Caucasian shepherds, and they were insane and they would just run on you like, you know, foam coming out of the mouth. So you kind of, the pole helps you keep at least this meter of distance instead of having dog right at you. So yeah, it's kind of for defense as well,
multi-purpose, and for the tent, of course. So
I have our tent needs hiking poles as well.
You know, I think there's obviously a story here, and I can't wait to hear about it later. You fending off dogs on the trail.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, next question. Boots or trail runners?
Trail runners.
Okay. All right.
And yeah, when we started hiking in the very beginning, when we still lived in Denmark, then of course we bought these massive leather boots. And I think on hike one, I had blue toenails. So never anymore after that.
Yeah, blue toenail is not a good sign. That's usually an indication that something is wrong.
It's not my color either. So.
Do you have a particular brand of trail runner you prefer?
ultra for me, for sure. I have very picky feet. I'm very prone to blisters, and ultras are the only ones where I don't get. But crystal, yeah.
I could go in wooden shoes if I had to, but like my first trail runners before PCT, we didn't really have. So I bought just in Mexico in some shop like this Adidas, and we didn't know how to size them. So they were sized exactly, so my toes at some point just started sticking out, but like I never had any blister, even though there was clearly like a lot of rubbing. I don't know, my feet somehow can just,
yeah,
just put whatever on them and it's going to be funny.
Well, funny story with those Adidas is that he had ordered a new pair from Amazon to, what's it called, Grumpy Bears? And on the PCT right before the Sierras, but they didn't arrive on time, so he had to continue into the Sierras with the shoes with the holes, and he climbed Mount Whitney with his toes out of the shoe.
With his toes sticking out. Nice. And Coyote, did I hear you correctly that you said you could hike in wooden clogs?
I think so. I haven't tried, but
he like, never has blisters. I don't know.
So it's far, like, it's somehow
well, if you hike with wooden clogs, don't forget to drill holes in them, right? To save the grams. You know, a pound on the foot is like five on the back. So
So they say.
All right. So far, so good. All right. Your preferred shelter system: tent, tarp, hammock, or cowboy camping?
I think prefer this tent, but we haven't really tried tarp. Hammock is nice, but you need trees for hammock, so you can't really use it in the mountains that much.
And I think it takes longer time to get used to the hammock. I've definitely had some of the best sleep in my life in a hammock when we lived in the jungle, but it's just because your body gets so used to it. And yeah, but yeah, it's very specific for summer temperatures, I'd say, because otherwise you're going to need the underquilt and so on. Mm-hmm. So tent is just easier and more, has more functionality in different terrain and weather. So.
And with bugs and with wind and I think
it's amazing that, you know, I've had some of the best naps ever in a hammock, but I can't sleep overnight in a hammock.
Why?
I don't know.
I found often that
you have to try more.
For me, the problem was often that the head would, like, you know, once the muscles relax in the neck, the head starts to like fall to the side. Mm-hmm. So what really helps is that U-shaped pillow that you use on the airplane. So it keeps your head nicely in the middle, and then it's really, really
also nice. Depends on hammock. If you use like the regular kind of sack, then it's, I don't think that's comfortable. But we use these like asymmetric hammocks, so you can actually sleep on your side and kind of be really straight. So those were great. But it takes like a week or something sleeping to like get used to it.
Now, careful, Snake Eyes. That was... I said, careful, Snake Eyes. That was almost a pro tip right there. The U-shaped neck pillow when you're sleeping in a hammock. That's a good pro tip right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
This next question is very important. Big deduction if you answer incorrectly here. So do you guys prefer stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Depends on the weather, I would say.
Prefer stove. But when we hike in summer conditions, like when we know that it's not going to be really that cold, then we cold soak.
Yeah, so it's very seasonal for us.
Like, for example, when we hiked in Pyrenees, across Pyrenees, then we cold soaked, even though there were a few cold mornings. But it's just to save weight because there was so much ascent that...
Also, it depends on the country, I think, because you can't really expect in every single country to have couscous and oats and things all the time. So,
or gas.
Again, in some countries you just can't buy gas, so you would have to have the heavier, what is it, omnifuel or multi-fuel stove. So maybe then cold soaking is better.
I think stove is nice, like especially if it's cold, it's like great morale boost that at least when you are freezing and pushing through hard terrain, then you know that at least there's gonna be warm meal in the end waiting. So
now this 50, is the 50. Okay. So this is not part of the hiking poll, but what is your preferred cold soak meal?
I think actually I have a good one. So for me it's the breakfast, but what I do is I mix into my oats the previous night before a little bit of instant coffee. And then raisins, just a little bit of sugar and cinnamon. And then by the morning, of course, the raisins get soft, but also the kind of sweet coffee foam almost, it turns into a foam and it gets to the top of the oats. And then it's kind of like this super fancy dessert. And I don't know, it's just the bitterness of coffee with the sweetness of raisins and a bit of sugar. It's really...
And for those that need their coffee, then you just eat it in the morning.
Yeah, coffee and oatmeal. That sounds pretty good, actually.
Mm. Yeah, you should try it. But don't overkill with the coffee. Just a little bit to get the flavor.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, I think it's noodles.
Noodles.
Noodles. Cold soaked noodles.
Yeah.
And we often add the soy chunks, you know, the soy protein. Mm-hmm. It's nutritious and it can take whatever flavor, bouillon cube or whatever herbs and spices you add. So, yeah. And it's super light. So,
that's good. All right. Next question. Life is better above or below the tree line?
I think above,
yeah.
More epic views. Then again, depends. If it's scorching hot, sometimes can be, then like there is no shade. So then sometimes you really miss the shade. And bugs tend to be less above the tree line.
Yeah, I think also above, because it's just bigger adventure, I think, for me personally, at least. And you get the feeling of being more away from everything, because people just haven't civilized the mountains yet, most locations. So it just creates a better atmosphere for an adventure, I think.
Okay. Now, the three long trails in America, the AT, the CDT, and the PCT, all run north to south or south to north. And so the last question in the hiking poll is, should those long trails be hiked northbound or southbound?
I think northbound, but...
Yeah, feels somehow more right to do them north, but I guess...
But we did the trail in Chile southbound, or...
Well, that is meant to be southbound.
Yeah, but I think it's
also southern hemisphere.
Yeah, space. I was going to ask, does it change your perspective if it's southern hemisphere?
Yeah. Oh, that's true, actually, yeah. So if you were to flip it, the seasons and the trail to north, then that would be northbound. So yeah, northbound.
This sounds like a very scientific answer. That's good. That's good.
We are engineers, so
that's right. That's right. So let me do some quick calculations here. Let me divide by 3. I'm gonna multiply by pi, carry the 2, and a solid 73 for each of you. So congratulations. You're mostly sane.
Okay. That's a boring answer, but okay, I'll take it. So we have some work to do to get down to 50.
Did you think
that's right? Now, if you're in the southern hemisphere, you'd be working to get back up towards 100. But, you know,
that's true.
Yeah, right.
That's how it works.
OK. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit. We've heard a little bit about your background, but let's talk about where you grew up. If you guys were involved in sports or hobbies growing up, and how you got involved in thru hiking. So who wants to go first?
I can go.
Okay.
So I grew up in the city, but on like a kind of outside a bit of the city. So it was felt like countryside, but even though I was still in capital, we would just every day go out with friends and make trouble in other people's gardens. So kind of like to spend a lot of time outdoors, and there were no computers back in the day. So you kind of, that was your only entertainment. Go outside and make trouble for the childhood, but yeah.
And so that's how you got involved in the outdoor adventure life is
playing
in other people's gardens.
I forgot the question.
No. I thought you would then say about your childhood, but okay, like the way we kind of got together in it, because we were both working office job, and it was you get total about 4 or 5 weeks out a year of holiday. So we were not happy with that, and we thought of how to reverse the proportions of spending most of the time outdoors. So then I'll just tell the whole story. Then we quit our jobs to, and yeah, we took that course in the jungle to become expedition leaders, because technically when you finish the course, they offer you a job. But right after, we had the trail planned, the PCT. So we never actually took the job and sort of just continued on, yeah, figuring things out and hiking and more adventure and gaining experience. And yeah, I guess we will talk about that a bit more.
Yeah.
Because it's all so interconnected, but yeah.
How about you, Snake Eyes?
I mean, it's really difficult to try and pinpoint where we got the hiking bug. We've asked that from ourselves as well. But yeah, I would say I wasn't super outdoors, maybe as a little kid, but once you're a teenager, you're like, you know, no one cares about the nature. You want to party and have fun. But then, yeah, in Denmark, we just started traveling, you know, to big cities like Rome and Paris and stuff. And we always took this challenge. I think that is kind of where it started, that we always took this challenge to only use our feet, no public transport. So we would spend a few days in Rome and walk like 100 kilometers or something just to see everything. And maybe that's why we started to like walking so much. And also because we noticed that all the cities, they look exactly the same wherever you go. So we started to look more into nature where we traveled. And then nature became mountains. And then instead of staying in hotels, we started to hike around. And then longer hikes and more adventure. And we always like to say that whenever we came back from our holidays, we needed a holiday, because our holidays were always so tough, like just really exhausting physically.
Yeah, actually our first like big trips were on bicycles. We were cycling in Europe, yeah. Like a few thousand kilometer cycling trips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and camping.
Yeah.
Now, you've shared that you guys met in Denmark while you guys were studying to become mechanical engineers. And we've also heard that you quit your jobs and that you took this course to be expedition leader, but you didn't take that job. So how are you currently paying the bills and financing your adventures?
So I would say the best word to describe it is hustle. So I do often translation and editing between English and Estonian and back. So that it doesn't pay a lot, but it's really flexible. So that suits me really well. Then we have built the camper van and sold it. Then we renovated our friend's caravan. So we got a little bit from that work. And two times we've worked seasonally in Switzerland in a ski resort. So I don't know what else there is.
The trick is not to make bills. Yeah. Be homeless then.
Yeah, it is true. Spend little.
It's like the ultralight version of living, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I think in many ways we are quite minimalist, but of course I'd say our biggest expenses are, you know, gear items, because we're definitely very addicted to hiking, and of course travel costs. But whenever we travel to a country, we try to only move around on foot again, or just with hitchhiking or cheap public transportation. So just cut costs wherever possible.
Yeah, camp. Don't stay in hotels. Mm-hmm. If you have to resupply, then plan it so that you enter the town, be in a town and then leave the town in the evening. So you don't, every hour you spend in town, it's like there is some probably equation with how much money you're going to leave there.
Smart.
But a more recent development is also, well, maybe kind of ties to what we talked about before, that we quit our jobs. Our goal when we did that was to spend more time outdoors and hopefully do that as professionals, as mountain guides at some point, which is why we started with that course.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, that has led to taking a mountain leader course. And now this year, we're doing international mountain leader course. So last year, I started a guiding company where I have 5 co-guides who are also only women, and we only guide women. So yeah, so that is a little bit of extra income and also to use all the knowledge and experience we have gained. And Chris is my manager. He helps me with all of the arrangements and transportation and things like that. And we have also guided some stuff together. And
yeah.
And Chris is hopefully working towards maybe more of a mountaineering guide in the future. It's a very long process because it's just crazy expensive and time consuming, gathering all the experience and the skills. So
plus, like, we always go on 3-4 month trips to hike, so then there's even though it goes for experience, like, not maybe, yeah, not the paper.
So hopefully, right, it all pays off one day.
Okay. Snake Eyes, I'm going to test your translation skills, because what I'd like you to tell our listeners is that we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to hear about some adventures by Coyote and Snake Eyes. Go ahead, in Estonian, please.
I don't even remember the whole sentence. All right. Head kuulajad, me teeme nüüd ühe pausi ja kui me tuleme tagasi, siis kuuleme veel rohkem seiklusi Stinalt ja Kristjan Silt, kelle rajanimed on Coyote ja Maasilmad.
All right. I'll trust you on that one. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. The John Freakin' Muir Pod is sponsored by Outdoor Vitals, the ultralight backpacking gear company whose mission is to improve the mental, physical, and emotional health of mankind by facilitating impactful outdoor experiences. Outdoor Vitals creates innovative technical products with confidence-inspiring education that empower outdoor ultralight adventurers. Their focus on performance enables you to live ultralight with gear you can actually be confident with. Whether you're looking for an ultralight sleep system, shelter, or pack, or if you're looking for top-quality apparel for the trail, you can find it at Outdoor Vitals. Do yourself a favor. Live ultra light.
And welcome back. We're talking to Snake Eyes and Coyote. We've heard about some of their past and growing up and meeting. And now we want to talk about some adventures. And so I know that from our discussion points that we covered earlier, and talked about prior to the episode recording here, you'd done some running, you know, some marathons, triathlons, ultras. Was that kind of the your early experimentation of with fitness and outdoors and trying to find the limits?
Well, yeah, as our travels became more physically demanding, we needed to get more fit for the adventures that we wanted to go. And yeah, running, of course, is one of the good ways how you can get fit for that. So yeah, I think we picked up running. And then, of course, you run 5K race, 10K race, half marathon, marathon, and you always, like, after feel great, and you kind of start to look forward to what else can your body do.
Mm-hmm. And it becomes addictive. But I had a totally different reason for starting running, because I guess
Coyote was chasing you?
No, the other way around, I guess. I'm not sure if it was the beginning of our relationship. It was really awkward, but basically he didn't want to date me. So I started running out of anger, because maybe subconsciously, but maybe because he told me, I thought that was a fact. So I started definitely to run because of some confidence issues maybe. And then when we did eventually get together, we started running more together. And then we started, pushing our limits more and more.
And it was kind of like fun thing to do.
Yeah, we did a lot of like races, not ever winning anything, but just, you know, for the atmosphere of races.
Coyote, I have to tell you that technique usually doesn't work with women.
We have different rules in Eastern Europe, you know.
All right. Yeah. And so you've run all different distances. Have you stopped at marathon? Have you gone past marathon?
Yeah, Both of us.
Actually, my first ultra, you can say, or distance longer than marathon was right after the PCP, like a week or so after I had signed up for the on Olympic Island in Washington,
Peninsula.
Olympic Peninsula. There was the first ever ultra marathon, was 50 kilometers. And and then I just, without any training, went there and yeah, actually did pretty good.
We actually had both signed up for it, but I got, bitten by a tick? Mm. Bitten, right?
That's correct.
You got ticked.
Yeah, I got tricked by a tick. So I had Rocky Mountain spotted disease. If you want, you can Google that. But
it can be, yes.
So I was laying bed while Chris went to run. And I think the reason why we wanted to try an ultra right after PCT is just to see how the fitness translates. And of course, we were listening to a podcast where David Goggins was saying, just go and do it. Go and do the things that scare you. So, yeah, but I couldn't do it that time. So,
unfortunately.
Good advice. And I imagine you had to be in pretty good shape after the PCT, Coyote. So you felt pretty good on that ultra?
There was no running shape, but because there were a bit of uphills, so like I could hike faster than every runner was running. So in that sense, it translated pretty well.
Yeah, you were like third or something.
Fourth overall, yeah.
Third.
Well, there weren't really that many people, but still, yeah.
And just to show off, did you run it in your pack?
No.
Actually, another funny thing was by the end of the trail, we were super broke. And I think Chris had like $200 left on his account. And then he went to REI and bought like all new running things, because like all our gear was totally wasted, and he like spent all of his money on running things just to go into this race. So that's dedication.
Yeah, sorry Snake Eyes, no, there's no money left for medication for Rocky Mountain spotted fever. You're on your own.
Well, insurance luckily paid that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's not our fault your medical system is so expensive.
Oh, there you go. Nice. All right. Hey, and you mentioned that there was a trip that was particularly meaningful for both of you early on. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Is that the King's Trail?
Yeah. So it's actually a long distance trail that is in Sweden. I think in total it's about 400 plus kilometers. But because we went to do it in March, I believe, which is winter, and we wanted to do it in skis. So it's quite popular in the Scandinavian countries to, it's kind of not ski touring, it's more like backcountry skiing. So you don't really use skins and things, and the skis are slightly thinner, and you don't really downhill ski afterwards, because a lot of it is just flat and then a few low.
Like there are mountain passes. But it's
Cross-country skiing, yes.
Kind of. You don't do the specific skiing sky. It's more like walking on skis.
Okay.
And the funny thing about it was my idea, and Chris had never, ever, ever been on cross-country skis. So literally on day one, we put the 30-kilo sleigh behind him, skis under him, and like, go.
That way.
And he struggled a lot for the first, I don't know, a few hours, but he picks up things really, really fast. Whereas for me in my country, we all as kids already learned to ski, because we have, even that's weird actually, because in Latvia also they have good winters. But yeah, for some reason, skiing is our national sport here. So
yeah,
Coyote spent his time in his neighbor's gardens. He wasn't skiing. So
yeah. true.
Pretty much. Yeah, I like first day, I remember I hated it, and because that sleigh, like you move and it pulls you back, and sometimes on a small downhill, like when you stop, the sleigh doesn't, so like it pushes you over, and I wasn't having fun. And Stina was like, you want us just, let's go back, give the skis. And I was like, no. And then somehow by day two, I was like, oh, it's actually fun, because we get to, you get to stay in these huts and there is sauna, and like, you don't need to actually carry that much.
Yeah, and it's just the nature there in the winter. You're totally out. There's no phone signal, no electricity, nothing. You have to, in the huts also, no one like helps you. You have to cut the firewood. You have to bring the water from under the ice. And yeah, it's just you're fully on your own. And I think already like day four, there was a massive, massive storm. Like you could hear the wind howling, and the whole night I couldn't sleep. And I was like,
visibility,
yeah, nothing. The whole night I was absolutely sure that we are not moving the next day, because it would just, you know, walk to your death basically. And then in the morning we wake up and Chris was like, what do you mean we're not going out? Of course we're going out. So he was totally insane. Like we had never done anything like that. And we didn't have, I mean, we've grown up with having winters, but to be in the backcountry like that without any, you know, we didn't have any SOS device. That wasn't even a thing back then.
So. Now looking back, it maybe wasn't a smart move, but like, no, at that point, it looked like, seemed like a good idea. And we survived. Mm-hmm. Actually, somehow. The day before it was already got stormy and we were just going with this sleigh and skis, and there were two Swedish guys ahead of us, and they kind of stopped and like were looking around, kind of thinking, and we just went by, like said hi, and then later in the next hut, and then once we passed them, they looked back and they continued following us. And then later in the evening we met in the same hut, and they were like, well, we were actually thinking about turning back because it was too stormy, but then we saw that you guys looked so confident that we thought these guys know what they're doing. We'll just follow them. We had like no idea.
We had never even, I think, done a multi-day hike when we did that. I don't even know why we chose that. I don't think we really knew the risks when we were going to there, but we like just pushed so many boundaries that we didn't even know like could be pushed or...
Well, like the
it was crazy.
Right after we had the toughest ice, like an obstacle challenge, which is like made out of ice obstacles, and in the end you jump in the ice lake.
Yeah, it's like the American. Maybe. You have, what are they called?
Tough Mudder or something?
No, the
Spartan.
Spartan races.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like that, but it was on
made out of ice.
Yeah, it was on a ice covered lake, and in the very last one, yeah, you had to jump in the water. So.
So that. Ski trip was to prepare for that.
So we just impulsively signed up for these things and did it. And then after that, you're like, all right, what's next?
Oh, there's a lot to unpack right there. I have questions. Number one is I want to point out that, you know, a phrase in America, I'm not sure if it translates to Estonia and Latvia, but we have this phrase called that says ignorance is bliss. You know, if you don't know what you don't know, then, you know, you're happy. And so you guys are out there. And I think that's a good example of, you know, we didn't know what we were getting into and thought, hey, in fact, you convinced some experts out there that the conditions were good enough to keep going. So.
Yeah, I remember because we rented skis on the sleigh. There's like a little depot where you can do that. And the guys were like asking, so how many days do you think you guys will be doing? And I estimated our daily distance on, you know, flat ground, which is what I have in Estonia, and thin cross-country skis without any backpacks and everything. And I was saying, oh, yeah, we'll do it in 5 days. And they were like, okay. But at the same time, they could see that we didn't know anything about backcountry skiing. But we did, I think, in the end, do it in 5.5 days. But that's purely because of our physical fitness.
And maybe I have to mention that we didn't do that whole 400 kilometers.
No,
there is
like
a section which ends up at by the highest mountain of Sweden, Kebnekaise. So it's like 120 kind of loop. So it's really kind of easy, good intro, and you can do it all year round. But I think in winter it's fun.
Very special. Yeah.
Well, what was the name of that mountain again?
Kebnekaise.
Okay.
It's the highest mountain in Sweden, 2,000 something meters.
Okay. And another thing I have to point out is that I think I'm considerably older than both of you, and yet you guys are talking about back in the day with no computers and no Garmin rescue devices.
It was like just on the border of when computers came. Well, in our childhood, like,
we still don't have a Garmin or any SOS device.
We use Garmin watches, but we don't use any emergency beacons because of the expedition leader training. Like we pretty much for 3 months practiced rescue and
self-rescue
and how to, like, so we really rely on ourselves, and we think that maybe having a device might give you a false sense of security because you are like, instead of like in a place where you would maybe think like, should I go, should I not go across some sketchy area, like because of the device, you might think, oh, if something happens, I press the button and, you know, helicopter comes and picks me up and it's all good, which is in reality, that might not be the case. And helicopter might come in 3 days if it's a big storm. So instead you should maybe use your judgment and not get into situations like that. So, and also, yeah, we just rely on each other's knowledge and skill.
And we also hike or adventure in countries where there isn't any mountain rescue or any helicopters in the whole country. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure some response service would still get your alarm, but
yeah, I'm not saying that you shouldn't use it, especially if you hike solo, for sure. It's like because you have no one else to rely on, but like when we will be guiding now in the mountains
as guides
we will bring the device, but when we just got two of us, then we rely on ourselves.
Right. I hear that if you push the button on the Garmin in Armenia, they send the dogs out to you.
Yeah. Dogs eat you and then it's no problem. Yeah.
Right. Then there's no more problem.
Yeah.
And so what did you learn from that? What did you learn about yourselves from that trip on the King's Trail?
Well, yeah, just that. Whoa, it's windy here. Just, I guess that what you think is your limit is definitely not your limit. And I think it was also our first experience to really be in the wilderness and to just be very self-sufficient and how to manage cold better and these kind of things. I think like also how to work together.
Yeah. And for me, I remember just you saw the nature. Like I've never seen nature in that way, you know, when it's like stormy and sometimes you slog through the wind and like your goggles are frozen and you look up and there is like some clearing in the wind and you see these cliffs of the mountains and it felt like you're on some, you know, Europa or somewhere, another planet completely. So it was kind of like brought this, I don't know, emotion or like feeling that you kind of want to visit again. So then of course, for the next trips, you again want to visit some places that will maybe give you again this feeling of like being on another planet, even though I don't know, it's weird, or like, yeah, being away from civilization, I think. And in general, also when we hiked the PCT, what I liked the most is just feeling of being out there, like being in a well that you know that there is like multiple days to the closest road that like you have to be 100% self-reliant. Like I think that's sort of that, you know, you are in the wild and like every decision you make, like it's all, you know, your life might depend on it. So you have to be really like, it kind of gives this, I don't know how to explain this, really feeling of freedom, I guess, in a sense that
you make all the decisions.
Yeah, like you are 100% responsible for yourself and there is no rescue and nothing, you know, that like it's all on you. Kind of, I don't know, I like it.
Nice. And so from there, where do you guys go? What's the next adventure we should talk about?
Well, probably some more shepherd dogs, because we are hopefully, now we don't 100% know because of the situation in Europe, but the plan is to go to Tajikistan. There is a big trail that this I think Belgian guy has come up with. It's totally unofficial. Nothing is marked and the GPX track is not even fully scouted. And we heard that on one section, a few guys almost died last year. And of course, like bridges get washed away and some bits haven't been walked for years. So
it's called the Pamir Trail.
Yeah. So it follows.
How do you spell that? From
Pamir, Pamir. It's the name of the mountain range there. Tajikistan is, it just on a map, it looks amazing. I think it's 93% covered in mountains or something like that. And yeah, the trail crosses the whole country and it's about 1,000 kilometers, but nobody knows because no one has ever walked it. So yeah, we'll be, if it happens, it's going to be really, really special, I think.
Wow. Like also, well, that's like, now we're going to do it. This year, like July, August, but like to go on trip like that, we had to like pretty much since that the King's Trail that we did 5 or 6 years ago, that yeah, we've been building experience and every next trail we kind of picked up more challenge. So like being more out there, less trail, more bushwhack, more like we done after the PCT, like other trails where like, yeah, the HRP, Pyrenean high route, or Haute Route de Pyrenees, or something like that, which was, it's the highest line that crosses the Pyrenees mountain from Atlantic to Mediterranean. There's like GR10 and GR11, but
they stay low.
They are marked and they are kind of, yeah, you are on the trail, whereas in, on HRP, you are often without trail and you have to nav more. And yeah, it's just a lot more climbing. It's like just kind of one of the hardest, I think, in Europe.
Yeah.
Right. And then, and for our American listeners, if you're familiar with the John Muir Trail or the High Sierra Trail in the Sequoias in California, the high route for the Pyrenees also sounds like the Sierra high route, which is it's a higher route than the John Muir Trail, and it's often unmarked and there's a lot of wayfinding involved with that. So that sounds very interesting. You've done that route before in the Pyrenees?
Yeah, we did it 2 summers ago, I think.
HRP,
it's just about 800 kilometers, but it's just got a lot like of
50,000 meters. Well, 50,000 meters of up and down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's epic. It's really beautiful, and you cross back and forth between Spain and France, and then you also cross Andorra. There. So it's a very, you just go through all these different cultures, kind of, because also within Spain itself, you have the Catalonian and like the Basque country, and yeah, it's just, it's beautiful.
Nice.
And then, like to build up to the Tajikistan. Also, the next kind of big trail we picked up was the Transcaucasian Trail, which we did the Armenia part of it, which again was, we did it before it was unofficial. So we had to plot our own route, and again, it's unmarked, and there were a lot of shepherd dogs, and it's in the mountains. So it's kind of like every time we pick up this like experience where we will challenge ourselves on the hike.
I'd say there's definitely a pattern to how we choose the trails now. Within the last few years, it just goes from obscure to more obscure. Yeah. So just these like weird trails that aren't even trails, but are more like someone's ideas. So that's the same with Caucasian Trail. Now it is sort of slowly becoming official because they have founded an NGO. But yeah, when we did it wasn't. Yeah, it's definitely not marked or anything. It's just, it was an idea. And the same with Armenia, and now the same with Chile as well. The Greater Patagonian Trail is also, it's not a real trail. It's just an idea.
I'll turn the light on quickly because I think it's getting dark.
Oh, there you guys are. Okay. He just turned on the light. Coyote turned on the light. It's getting dark in Estonia in the sauna.
Yeah.
Have to light it up.
Now I have to ask, I mean, how are your map and compass skills? How are you doing using a lot of maps and compass as you are out there on these obscure trails that aren't well defined?
Well, we've done the mountain leader. Like, we are certified mountain leaders in summer conditions in UK, but also the other countries that recognize the certificate. But for that course, you had to like really learn navigation. But on these trails, often like there is no paper maps, for example, for Chile or Armenia. And it's also inconvenient to carry like a reasonable scale trip map for like, you know, hundreds of kilometers. If it's 800 kilometers, you'd have to have like this many big pile of maps. So we usually use phone these days.
And we have a lot of backups because we have the 2 Garmin watches. So those both can have GPX files, and we have 2 phones and 2 power banks. So technically we have like four backups for them.
We use Gaia
tracks,
Gaia GPS for navigation. And often we have to actually plot our route there. So
yeah. But to answer your question, our map and compass skills are top notch, just because they have to be for these courses. And we really like it. I think once you learn it, you become kind of a nerd and you want to, like, it feels special. It's like, instead of using Kindle, you want to read the book. It's the same. Instead of using the phone apps, you kind of really like and enjoy using a real map. So.
Okay. I was getting nervous for you. You didn't really, answer the question, but now you're top notch map and compass skills. So I feel better. I feel.
Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
9 out of 10, maybe, let's say. Can always be better.
I'd say it also depends on the map quality. So,
and it helps in on the terrain when there is no trail marked, so you only see elevation lines, so you can sort of figure out where to go if you don't have a view of the mountain, especially
because now, let me ask you this. Do you have any experience with like extended bushwhacking without map and navigation methods?
That's where the Zambia trip comes in.
Zambia. Okay. Let's hear about Zambia.
Yeah.
So,
is this another obscure trail?
Yeah. Well, we went there.
Definitely not a trail.
There was no trail. So that's a funny story. So we were volunteering for this project in Zambia, which helps young people who are poor that want to go to high school, but they can't afford because all education is for money. So they stay a year in that project and improve their English and different other social skills so it prepares them for high school, and then they get sponsorship to go to high school. So we were kind of the facilitators of the project and for 6 months, and then we like hiking, so we obviously there was around Christmas to New Year, we had a week or something, and we saw on the map, like we were like, oh, where can we go?
Because Google map, not a real map.
Yeah, Google map. So we were in the very north of Zambia by Lake Tanganyika, and north of it, like pretty much on the border of Congo, there is this Nsumbu National Park. And we thought like, well, it's only 50, 60 kilometers. And, you know, on Google map, it just looks like bush.
There are
we thought we can probably go there, and kind of, yeah, the lake would be always on our one side. And yeah, we just had a compass, so we knew the direction we want to go. And we kind of talked to locals about, yeah, someone told, so you need to go to that village, then to that village, then to that. And like, I don't know. On the Google Maps didn't have any names for the villages.
But so we could on see. The satellite image, you could see small villages like houses. Yeah. So yeah, just literally in every village, we would ask, how can we get there? And they would say some name of the next village and kind of show a direction or a bush path. Yeah. And
then you go on that path and it splits and you're like, oh, well, which way do we go? And then, yeah, sometimes we would get lost and like, yeah, just go without any trail, just through the bush, kind of following compass for
more like looking hours. Okay, we know we have to go to east, let's just keep walking until we cross a path, because a lot of people still move around in there, they go and cut trees a lot, so there are just paths, or I think they were also planting a lot of corn, so there's just like a ton of paths basically that you can follow, and most of the time they end up somewhere.
So as we were making our way towards the national park, initially we planned to enter through the official entrance, which we know that there is. And then on the way, we gathered information from locals that there's actually another entrance that goes through this chieftainess land, that she has an access, and actually the park belongs to her and whatnot, and that we can get permit to enter the park from there. So like, okay, cool, so let's do that. So we show up to this village, found some boy that spoke English. He took us to this chieftainess. She was like very, very old, like, and she lives on the other side of the river. There's the rest of the villages and that. So like, we go there and we bow and say hi and everything and clap. You need to kind of do this weird movements. And then
she has a lot of power locally, like it's kind of still native tribe organization there. Even though, yeah, that's not really valid anymore.
So then it was already evening, so we crashed in her yard and cooked with her on her fire. And then she wrote us this handwritten permit and put some stamps on it. And yeah, we gave her some money and some medicine, because yeah, in Africa, they really lack medicine. So most people like want actually some just painkillers from you, because yeah, they're just not available. And yeah, so we entered the national park with her permit, and we were walking about already like next day kind of afternoon, and we passed this ranger, and he was like doing some work, and we're like, hey, and keep walking, and he like looks at us completely shocked, like, how are these two white guys here, like he completely didn't expect to see us. And then he asked,
was also outside of season, I think
it was kind of because there are some tourist lodges in that national park
for fishing people.
So then we looked up, we saw that there is a lodge, let's go there. And it was Christmas day, and then he checked our permit and said I need to check on this. So we were kind of hanging out in a lodge, and I already arranged with locals to stay there for the night and had a nap. And then a few hours later, a car with rangers come, and the head of them came and kind of asked what are we doing here, how we got here, and they pretty much said that we are detained until they sort us
out. And it was Christmas Eve, and they told us, all right guys, get on the car, we're gonna go to the
nearest
ranger
town.
Station and basically there was a danger that we would go to jail on prison evening on Christmas evening.
But you had the permit from the chieftainess. I mean, that's that had to count for something, right? No.
Well, turned out that that's not how things work anymore in rural Zambia. That there are actual laws and actual people who guard the national park. So
but we got a nice safari ride then.
Yeah, so
in the back of the truck, and there were elephants running, and we were So in the end, it all worked out.
Nice. Yeah. Now, I was going to ask, on the PCT, you'll see the occasional bear, deer, marmot, maybe I'm sure snake eyes saw lots of snakes. What kinds of animal life did you encounter in Zambia?
We saw crocodiles. Chris went to swim because in the Lake Tanganyika, there are crocodiles and signs, don't swim there. But Chris is like, well, I'm
dirty
from hiking.
But I had snake eyes with me. So I was like, snake eyes, keep an eye on crocodiles.
Like half an hour later, we did see a crocodile there. And then we saw hippos, massive hippos. They're crazy.
They're a bit angry.
Wild hogs. Snakes during the hike we didn't see, I think, but
in
before
the project,
that we saw.
Yeah, there were some African rock python, I think it's called.
Yeah,
it's
biggest python in
3-meter long snake, huge, so powerful. When you lift it, it's so dense, it's just one muscle. Yeah. Crazy.
Now, Coyote, when you go swimming in crocodile infested waters, you want to have with you crocodile eyes, not snake eyes, because you ask snake eyes to keep an eye out. That's not her specialty.
I think he had crocs though, so maybe that counts.
No, it's to avoid danger, best is to be aware of it. Like for example, when we were in the jungle, so we lived, there were no facilities or anything. We were literally in our hammocks between two trees, and our food was on the ground in a mud in plastic bags, and our backpacks were on the ground. So it was really hardcore. But my tree was on the first day, the scariest day in the jungle, because there's everything. As soon as we entered, there were snakes and poison dart frogs and spiders and everything. So okay, so so that's the first night is the scariest, and then my hammock, the instructor was so these two trees are yours, and I'm what are these bugs? And those were the bullet ants, so they have the most painful sting in there. And so I had to tie my hammock on the tree which had the bullet ant nest, that bullet ants were going on the tree. So he was they're dangerous, don't get bitten, be aware that they are there, but it's all fine. So you learn really fast that there are things that can kill you, but they are not there to kill you. So often animals and other creatures are actually afraid of you. So you just have to be aware of the danger and tread carefully, because you are a guest there, not them. So just awareness is what keeps you.
Yeah. This is why life is better above the tree line. Right, fewer things that are going to try and kill me or have the ability to kill me. So,
well, above tree line, the nature itself, the weather can become more dangerous than any animal.
Yeah, rockfall.
Yeah,
crevasses,
and your own stupid decisions become much more consequential, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, in a city, it's dangerous because bus can drive over you any moment, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't go outside.
Okay, that's it. I'm not leaving my house. I'm staying where I am. That's what.
Just lift your face up from the phone and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Don't be texting or posting on Instagram as you're walking on the trail or off trail. Serious consequences.
Yep.
All right. This has been great talking about these obscure trails. We don't hear about these very often on the podcast. So this has been a lot of fun, but I do want to go to the PCT and that 2,600 mile hike, that adventure for you. What were some of the highlights? Do you have any particular favorite moments from the trail?
When you say favorite, I don't know. It's just one little story popped in my mind. I wouldn't say it's favorite, but it kind of joins up.
Before you tell me, have you guys heard of type 2 fun?
Yeah, of course.
Type 2 fun. Yeah, so it's not favorite when it's happening, but it's favorite. You like to talk about it. So is that what's coming? You have some type 2 fun to share?
No, it was just more of it actually joins up with the expedition leader course we did before.
Okay.
So during the course, they taught us that when you scream for help, or in general, like if you give warnings with loud voice, those words that you use should never sound like, for example, help or SOS or, I don't know, ouch or whatever. Like if you give loud announcements, choose your words. And then I just, I don't know why, but I just randomly remembered this episode, you can say. I think it was in the desolate wilderness in California, right after Lake Tahoe. We were just hiking. It was a beautiful day, and there was a river crossing, and there were two girls that we met there. I think they were just either on section hike or day hike or something. So Chris and I, we crossed the river. It wasn't like too bad. But I think if you're not experienced with river crossing, then that, you know, could end badly. But they stayed at the river crossing after us, whereas we like continued. And maybe 300 meters or something afterwards, we hear this loud scream that to us sounded like help, but like really loud, and you can't hear, you know, the individual words. And we were just like, instantly the instinct kicked in, like, fuck, like, okay, this is what we've been practicing for, you know, for the 4 months in the jungle. And we just instantly turned around and just like started rushing to the river crossing. But it turned out the girls had successfully crossed the river, and what they yelled was like, yeah, but to us it sounded like help. So I don't know why I remember this story, but this just...
They obviously didn't take that expedition training course.
Yeah, exactly. So remember, when you scream things in the mountains in sketchy places, don't make them sound like help. So
also another borderline pro tip right there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, can't pinpoint like a specific place, but like I think the whole trail experience, just being for 5 months living this simple lifestyle of just hiking, and you know that, you know what's the agenda for today, for the next 5 months, that there is no like planning or anything, and the trail is made for hikers, like the community around it, like, is just brilliant. It's like, yeah, if you wanna get the best hiking experience just and for long distance, then definitely I think like PCT is just great, because it's made for hikers. There is all infrastructure, everything is, the trail is nice, it's marked, it's easy to navigate, like resupply food, like it's perfect, you know. And
but never, I think, underestimate it, but because still like it can be really rough, and the weather can do all sorts of crazy things, and you can just slip on any rock out there. So yeah. It's got all the hallmarks of a great adventure, I would say, but made approachable, I think. So,
well,
yeah, very difficult to pinpoint. Every single day I was like, okay, guys, this is my favorite section for sure. And then like the next day I would say the same thing. So it's absolutely impossible to say.
Great all around.
Quite an achievement to hike the PCT. 2,600 miles from Mexico to Canada. Congratulations on that. Congratulations on all of these other obscure adventures that you guys have embarked upon. And
we mentioned half of them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, only half of them. You have a long list. And want to wish you the best of luck in July and August on the Pamir Trail.
Yeah.
Pamir Trail. So hoping that when you finish with that, you'll get back in touch and we can hear an episode about how that went, because that sounds like a pretty epic experience waiting for you.
Yeah, just finger crossed that it actually happens. So yes. We'll see.
Okay. Now, you talked about your expedition company organization earlier, but you didn't give it a name. What is the name of it?
So it's called Naked Metsa, which loosely translates to women to the forest. It kind of has this folk word for mermaid in the name. And it's, seems like everyone really likes the name. And it was definitely a very unexpected success. When me and my girlfriends first came up with it or started it, we thought, okay, let's do two hikes and then that's it. Like, who else wants to go to the forest with us? You know, we are nothing special. But the first year was really, really successful. I think we did 14 hikes. Each of them is just with a small group of 10 girls. And this year we have already planned three hikes abroad as well. So it will not only be women to the forest, but also women to the mountains. So, yeah, and a bunch of hikes, of course, here in Estonia.
And if any of our listeners wanted to get in touch with you and be part of an expedition that you're leading, how would they get in touch?
I'd say social media is probably the best, or email. We can actually connect this one a bit to the Tajikistan hike, because maybe you want to talk about it?
Yeah, well, that's not on the Tajikistan. They're actually inviting people to join us on this expedition. So it's not only for women, it's for anyone who wants. And we can send the link so you can add it somewhere. But you can join on us on the first section of it for like 10, 11 days, and then on the second bit for like a week. Or you can join for a 2-month expedition and do the whole thing together with us. So like the idea is that
we will keep you safe. This idea.
We'll keep you alive, because we have plenty of experience in that field, and it will be, I think, interesting for someone wants to discover these wild places and go where not many people have gone. Then that's a good chance to.
I think for a lot of people also the language can be a huge issue in those countries, but luckily we have our translator here who can communicate with other people from former Soviet countries, so that's another bonus.
I
speak Russian.
You speak Russian?
Yeah, so in Tajikistan, people in Soviet countries from East, they speak Russian mostly. That's how in Armenia we also could communicate pretty well with locals. So
it's a big advantage.
It's an advantage. Yeah.
If you're listening and you're considering joining, have no fears. Coyote speaks Russian. He fights off shepherd dogs with his hiking poles, and they are both top-notch navigators.
Totally correct points.
Yes. All right.
The pro tip insight of the week.
Hey, Snake Eyes and Coyote, do you know where we are right now?
We are still in sauna, so I'm not sure where you are.
We have to give tips.
That's right. We're at that time of the episode where I ask you for your pro tip inside of the week. What bit of trail wisdom can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better? And you say you're still in the sauna. You guys aren't even sweating, which is really impressive. So good work there. You guys are
getting cold, actually.
We haven't even bothered to make the fire yet. So.
Okay.
Sauna
so what,
is in the late evening.
Let's have a pro tip from each of you.
You want to go first?
No, you go.
Well, my pro tip would maybe be, don't overthink it. Just because often when you read some people or listen to someone's experience of how they prepared for the trail and planned every single detail and everything, it just feels like
waste
of time and nerves. So, but it's like easy to say, hard to do, because if you don't have experience, then you think that you will not survive if you don't plan everything out. But over and over again, from every single time, it has proven that just don't really plan, but don't plan too much. Just have an idea and just go with the flow, sort of arrive and see, because that's sort of you will be less stressed and
trail will provide.
Trail will always provide. So just more about your attitude of being positive and just enjoying, concentrate, put your effort in, not trying to make some deadlines or stick to the plan, but just enjoy more and whatever happens, happens, and you'll have a blast. And yeah.
Okay.
That's my pro tip. Don't plan.
well said, Coyote.
Don't plan.
You know that comment I made about if they want to join you on the trail, I'm starting to rethink that. So no, just kidding.
No, that's when we are giving a bit more plan.
If you go on your own, don't plan. If you take clients, then plan.
Okay. All right. How about you, Snake Eyes?
I think my pro tip would be to always take a smaller bag than you think you can fit in. So, because I feel what I've learned over the years that us humans, we have a tendency to fill every empty corner that we see, whether it's a box or bag or a car or whatever it is. So just take a smaller bag and really consider everything you put in there. So yeah, very simple, but I think long-term it's useful.
Very wise.
For people with big, with feet problem, wear bigger shoes. That was the biggest thing we learned on the PCT, because we always, all our lives, we would wear, if your foot is size 45 or US 10, whatever, then you wear the shoe that fits your foot, you know, toe is touching. So turns out that's not how you should wear your shoes. So ever since then, we've always been buying shoes like size 2 sizes bigger, sometimes even 3 sizes bigger. And you know, back in before, it felt like weird, but now it's like, yeah, it's normal. That's how you should size your shoes bigger.
Coyote, I think that is one of my favorite pro tips ever. Wear bigger shoes. Solid.
Gonna again save yourself so a lot of problems.
Yeah.
All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Stina and Christian. I want to thank them for joining us this week. Guys, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
I think Instagram is the best, because that's the one we update the most. Our, I guess you call it handle, is small footprint _ big adventures. So that kind of explains our attitude. So just do everything on foot if you can, or by bicycle.
Small foot but big shoe and big adventure.
Well, maybe we should change our Instagram.
Yes. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Do you guys have a TikTok yet?
No, it's too addictive. I had to uninstall it.
They have YouTube, actually.
You have YouTube? Okay.
Yeah, hopefully there will come some updates from the Armenia hike and also from the hike in Chile, but it takes a lot of time to work on the videos and also on everything else. So.
And we lost some videos from Chile, unfortunately. Mm. But you can see the Zambian hike there and the HRP. If anyone wants to know more about us.
Do you have any good footage of the shepherd dogs attacking?
Definitely.
Okay, good, good.
DCT movie is still coming, actually.
But there is footage, that's what you asked.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Guys, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some kind of adventure media to keep our listeners connected to the trail. We call this our adventure media recommendation. What do you have for us?
I think for me, but probably for both of us, one and only, it's the Rich Roll podcast. And it's not only because we like to do vegan propaganda, but he just has so many great guests, from everyone from science and medicine to ultra endurance athletes, long distance hikers, writers, psychologists. It's just such a variety of information, and it's a thrill to listen to on trail or on long runs. Once, you know, after a month of hiking, your brain just runs dry of all the new thoughts. So you need a little bit of inspiration for things to think about. So Rich Roll podcast is amazing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, I've got one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What did we miss?
We are building a van for new home for us. So
second van, actually.
Second van, yeah. So we lived in a van ever since we quit our jobs and sold everything, like we kind of been homeless, but then we built a van. So we've been on and off in the van and then we sold it and now we are building a new one. So yeah, that's so we don't have to live in Stina's dad's sauna. We are fixing that issue.
Yeah.
Nice.
But is it a bigger van? Half a year in a tent.
Sorry?
Is it a bigger van than the previous one?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. And Stina, I cut you off. What were you saying?
I don't remember. something.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that is a wrap from the John Freaky Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family?
Friends and family.
I don't know. Just a shout out to Chris. He's the best adventure partner. So, yeah. Recommendation, another pro tip is find someone to adventure with because shared experiences and memories are really, really important.
Bonus pro tip right there. That's an extra one. Thank you.
For free.
For free.
You can shout out Tom from Germany.
Yes.
Our
PCT and also buddy. Marcus from Germany.
Marcus. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you broke your hiking pole fighting off shepherd dogs in Armenia. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.